You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you from the Broadway Podcast Network studios. Obviously, it's been a pretty overwhelming few weeks for everyone in the country as we try to do all we can to make sure we stay safe and take the proper precautions with the coronavirus spread. We'll touch on that a little bit more in a second here. Thought we'd do something a little different for tonight's episode with the start of the baseball season hopefully coming soon. You know, many of the folks who listen to Break a Bat really enjoy the topical roundtable that we did back in January with our podcast co-creator, Scotty Katzman. And while Scotty couldn't be here tonight, I did round up another all-star panel that I'm really excited about as we preview the upcoming baseball season and talk a little bit about the state of Broadway. So let's do a couple introductions. Let's start with a familiar voice. My producer, Mr. Alan Seals.
Hey, Al, how are you doing?
As good as I can be. Yeah. I'm better now that I'm here. This is where I find solace.
We're recording this on the eve of just hearing the news that Broadway shut down.
Yeah, this is, it's still a little hard to process, but if I'm going to spend a night like this with anyone, I want it to be with someone like you, Alan.
So, well, thank you.
Glad you could be here. Then I'd like to introduce a few new voices. One is a dear friend of mine who I think does a great job of capturing the emotional side of being a baseball fan. He's a big Yankee fan, but I think more importantly, he's an objective one. So with that being said, let's say hello to our first panelist tonight, Mr. Gil Cosenza.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime.
Looking forward to it.
Next, we have someone back in the batter's box who actually appeared in our inaugural BPN episode with Angie Schwarr during the Fastball Derby segment. While he's a lifelong Mets fan, I think I can definitely say that he's a baseball fan first, which makes his input all the more important. Let's welcome back Mr. Doug Horowitz.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I don't think there's such a thing as an objective Yankee fan, just to say, but as a Met fan.
Or a real Mets fan. And thank God he has a Met jersey here, which is very uncomfortable.
You got to represent. It's been a bleeding heart. I wonder if I'll see a championship once in my life.
I think, Alan, the only one who had enough guts to wear Mets swag was Liz Callaway.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Liz Callaway came in with her hat on.
Yeah, that's right. She had a shirt or hat.
A shirt or hat, yeah.
It was one or the other.
It's like a tramp stamp, Mets fans. You know, when you wear the jersey, it just identifies who you are.
Well, Doug,
it's a sign of shame, but pride.
She's been nominated for a Tony to her credit, so like she could get away with that. So we might be giving you some shit throughout
the episode. Let's go, Mets fan.
And, you know, lastly, we have someone else here who I saved him for last because he's more or less been connected to the Bathead universe going back to the spring of 2019. Back then, many of you know Scotty and I were doing the show in my apartment. And for those who remember those wonderfully produced audio sessions that we would that we'd use through Google Chat, Alan was once a victim of that.
Oh, goodness.
So if Alan was our first guest, this next guy had someone from his blog actually serve as our second guest. Remember a little episode we did with Susie Pinstripe, who writes for my favorite Yankee blog, Bleeding Yankee Blue. Tonight, we're lucky enough to be joined by the blog's founder, head writer, and a true student of baseball, Mr. Robert Casey.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Dude, it's so good to have you. And
it's great to be here. Listen, I was quarantined, but I came out anyway. Is that all right? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
What a day, guys. I mean, where to begin? I mean, within the same day, we get an announcement that the Major League Baseball season is going to be postponed to at least mid-April, and Broadway is postponed to mid-April.
And the NHL.
Wow.
And the NHL, and the NBA. Oh, it's all at once. It's a perfect shitstorm.
Every single sport. And the less even, it goes further.
Disney's closing, too, by the way.
Yes.
Wait, they stopped the Mighty Mouse?
Wow.
Yeah. Disney's closing.
March Madness, which is hard to believe.
Well, betting's going to be taking a big hit, then.
I never thought I'd see the lights go out on Broadway, and I never thought that we'd be in a position where, I wasn't really I don't really remember the MLB strike of 94, 95 having a shortened season. At this point, yeah, they're saying April 15th. They're saying April 12th for Broadway. Are these just arbitrary numbers? Because we obviously don't really have a grasp of how true, or we don't really have a grasp of, you know, what's going on with Corona and how fast it's going to spread and how we're going to be able to contain it. You know, just for all of you guys, how do you feel about, you know, what's going on, being so passionate about, you know, sports and theater?
Well, for me, I mean, we've never seen anything like this, right? So they're just guessing. I think that's probably the fairest way to say. They don't know. And yeah, I mean, we don't know if it's going to get really bad or how bad it gets. And, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, this is more of a make sure you do everything right. Wash your hands, make sure you're not touching anything, you know, educate your kids, tell your friends about it and make sure. But, you know, is it airborne? I don't know. You know, the whole thing about being washing down surfaces is important. But like at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think anyone really knows. Has anyone here ever seen anything like this before?
Well, I mean, maybe I wasn't live for it. Spanish flu 1918. That seemed pretty bad. But besides that, I think the only other case I would see of stadiums played without fans was when Baltimore, when there was, what was that, the protest going
2014,
on?
2014, yeah.
Which Baltimore was riots. Very odd to see, but I don't know. I just, as a fan, I don't want to see baseball go away, but the fans really are an integral part of the game these players.
Huge.
And I feel like they get juiced, they get revved off it, and I feel like it's a completely different element. That's why March Madness, I believe, is canceled, because you got these underdogs coming in, and everyone wants a rah-rah for the underdogs.
But and that's a big fan thing, mm-hmm. right? Fans come out to see that. That's what, I mean, how many people do you know that go out, that's all they talk about right about now? And now there's not going to be any fans. Like, how does that work? How does that work?
Yeah, it's very eerie. It almost feels a little bit like September 11th, a little bit, you know, being an insurance guy, you know, even Hurricane Sandy. I mean, it's unbelievable how people are walking around like zombies, you know?
It's kind of like said,
it's very like a solemn day, you know? But hopefully, I mean, I was around for the 81 strike, which was terrible. And they came back into the split season, the Yankees, and when they played the Brewers and stuff like that, that was, you know, a lot of people were upset. In 94, they were upset too. I mean, when people came back in 95, I mean, people were not coming to the stadium. People were not going.
They were angry.
They were very angry. And I remember being able to get a playoff ticket, like it was easy that time. It was like, no way, yeah. 95. So, you know, people don't understand that. I mean, baseball has, a lot of things going on, and hopefully they get this right. But I guess at this point, they had to follow suit with the other, right, with the other sports and take safety first. But we'll see. I mean, nobody really knows, you know.
And we had a strike on Broadway too, Alan, right? Was it a writer's strike or the lighting crew strike?
There was a writer's strike in 07. Mm. And then there was recently, I don't remember if it was this year or last year or the year before, there was the equity strike. But the writer's strike, it affected TV and film and everything, so that stuff still happened, but there was nothing new being produced because you weren't allowed to write. Right. So, like, your favorite TV shows just ended mid-season without any explanation. And then, like, Broadway stuff, if it was already running, it kept running. But, like, auditions died because no one was writing new stuff to audition for.
On a lighter note, though, who's the happiest baseball team right now that there's no games for a couple weeks?
Well, I would say the Yankees, because we have the most injuries and the most guys who need to heal and recover.
That and the Astros.
That, why? Oh, to put off their the hate?
So they don't have to get booed anymore? You know? I mean, look, can we change it up? Is it too early? Am I running the table? I'm sorry if I am.
No, go ahead.
I think that it's the perfect time, if there is a perfect time, for the Astros to get the heat off them for a little while, right? I mean, they were getting killed, and they should get killed for what they did in 2017. Who knows what they're doing in 2018, 2019. With our blog, we're going off on them and Rob Manfred and Tony Clark. I mean, these guys really destroyed the game. The integrity is gone. What happened to punishing wrongdoers?
Steroids.
What about
it? I don't know. I mean, I'm saying, it's just like, it seems like everyone from the steroids era, they got a stiffer penalty as the players, as a legacy type of idea.
Agreed.
So
agreed.
I'm trying to ask, do you think this is a bigger deal than having steroids to cheat the game?
Oh,
technology over
listen,
steroids.
Great question. I think when you do steroids, it's about selfishness. And I think when you cheat as a team and make it strategic and use technology and have a plan, you do it as a team, and it's I think it's a lot worse. You really kind of ruin the game.
Here's what I'll say about that. They deserve every bit of the hate they've gotten. I know that we never would have gotten the facts had they not been granted immunity, but I feel like Manfred, obviously the commissioner of baseball, deserves an equal amount of hate. And like I said, when you hear the back and forth between Manfred and the players' union in the wake of all of this,
yeah.
I just feel like things could have been handled a lot differently going into the investigation. And for the most part, that would have started with Manfred kind of coming up with, I guess, maybe a deal or some sort of system with Tony Clark. But that should have happened years ago, because this was brought to light as far back as 2017. He puts all this energy into all these things that aren't necessarily important, like playoff opponent selection show with 14 different teams.
Right.
At the end of the day, he knew about this 3 years ago and didn't do anything about it. And that's why you have the mess that you do now, which is in my mind, if there's going to be any sort of a mandate that he's going to issue, you know, you heard rumblings that he was going to potentially extend suspensions around baseball for anyone who throws at the Astros.
Right.
He's in no place to do that because he's as guilty as anyone.
Correct.
He's in a no-win situation.
Yeah. And, you know, as a fan, I can understand your point, but I'm just tired of it. I mean, the Yankees lost to them 3 times
right.
in a decade. They got to beat them. And if you got this stuff like the old days of Goose or whatever, I mean, I know Goose. I've met these. I mean, if they knew there was cheating, they would have got chin music.
100%.
You know, and 100%. Honestly, they should have did that. You know, this BS that if they knew they were banging on the drums and stuff like that, someone should have got a high hard one. I'm sorry. I mean, I know Torrey didn't believe in that, and I don't think Boone. The new generation doesn't really believe in that. And honestly, I mean, I know it's just cheating, and it's just irritating after a while because it took so much away from the game. But in 2017, when the Yankees lost, they only scored 1 or 2 runs a game. So no matter what the bunt, you know, with the banging the drums, they didn't score any runs series. You know, so. I don't know. I go back with this with my son. You know, he says, "Dad, you know, I'm a boomer. I don't know. I just get tired of it. I know there's always been cheating part of the game, but when it goes beyond cheating till unlawfulness, then it's like you know."
And that's the thing. This thing was strategic. They went through this whole process. They knew had a whole system, and that's why I get outraged because like I said, Manfred, you know, doesn't do the proper punishment. Tony Clark comes out with this statement, this ridiculous statement about how he's always going to protect the player. Well, you're protecting cheaters that are knowingly, now admittingly cheating.
Maybe Tony Clark, they show him that someone should ask him if he got a hit in the 2004 playoffs. It would have been much better for us. How many men on base did they leave that series? He killed us that series.
That's old school baseball. That's old school. Fan right there. You know that's right there. Right?
I mean, Tony Clark, you know, that guy, when Olu got hurt, that killed the whole series. And Tony Clark must have left 25 men on base that series.
Right? Right?
Am I right?
You're right about that.
Every time he came up, there was 2 men on.
That's right.
And Tony Clark can get a hit, but he's ahead of the union now. But forget about that. Besides that, that's just being angry. I'm still angry for that 2004, you know?
Well, we do have precedent for such an instance like this. We had back in the day, if you guys recall, the Cardinals hacking scandal. And the Cardinals hacking scandal was where they actually hacked, ironically enough, the Astros. So that they would mine their data. And so their fine was 2 draft picks, number 56 and 75th overall, and $2 million fines. For some reason, that should have set a precedent. Like as we've seen with Roger Goodell and all of these other penalties happening in the NFL, why is it only that the Astros get fined $5 million?
That's a speeding ticket like for
oh, yeah.
I was going to say that's Altuve like sitting on the bench for 3 games. Like, I don't understand it.
Listen, I don't get it either. I will just tell you this. I get joy in watching these guys get razzed like crazy. It's if you're going to do it, if you're not going to get punished, then do it that way. And that's why I love being a fan. These guys can come out and do what they want, say what they want, hold up signs, mock these guys, rip them a little bit. It's all part of it. And you can tell it's getting to these guys. They can't swing at a pitch without hearing somebody whistle, and they swing and miss. They got guys just they're not able to focus. And listen, we're in their head. And that stuff to me is what being a fan is. I love watching that, especially when you do something wrong and you skate.
Never like that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I'm very curious to see it. Now you have Verlander injured too. They might have a little bit of extra time to play with as far as his rehab goes. But my one fear is I don't want to see them have any sort of success whatsoever. Are they going to use this as motivation, all the hate that they're getting, or are they just going to succumb to it? That's one thing that I'm actually really interested in.
They're still a good team.
They are a good team.
And they may rally together and do better this year. You don't know.
Well, you also got the Dusty Baker curse. You never know about that.
Get you in the playoffs, at least. Right?
Can I bring that Dusty Baker thing up? That drove me crazy, too. When he comes out and he's saying how he's worried about these guys getting hit and premeditated, hit by it. I get it. You're the new manager. You gotta say that. But my God, I mean, this whole thing was hatched up by them in the first place. And it goes back to Manfred, right? The guy did nothing. He should have done something.
He was just cowardly. Like that, he was like, let's see. And he thought he was a genius by giving the 1 year bans to the GM.
Oh yeah.
He was just like, I did so great.
Yes.
And the backlash that came back, he's like, it's just a trophy, guys. Right. Just a hunk of metal. Tell that to Aaron Judge, who could have won an MVP, to those other players who could still have careers to this day, like Mike Bolsinger, who is suing them for over $30 million, which is their whole entire postseason run worth of value.
Wow.
And that's also, when you make the difference between a World Series team and the second place team, it's $365,000 per person in the pool versus $200,000. So when you're a locker room attendant, that is life-changing. That means your kid's going to college or he's not. There's a difference right there. So the Astros, this goes a lot deeper and it cuts both ways and it cuts even deeper. And as an Astros fan, I would kind of accept this because the Mets have never won in my lifetime. Okay, let me just put that out. Okay, it's pathetic. Like, any way to win. But still, jobs were taken away, money was lost, and Manfred is just sitting on his laurels, just saying, this is nice. I think I did good.
I think the good thing about the Astros is that they only won once. Right, so the Nationals beat them. And so the good thing is that they didn't have a run of 2 or 3 years in a row, which is nice. But, we got three Yankees have lost them 3 times in the playoffs. I mean, enough is enough. They got to.
And you're right. They got to be the better team.
And I don't want the Yankees to start, whimpering and stuff. They should go on the field and beat them if they really want it.
Yeah.
And if you want to get Altuve, you don't have to hit him. You could spike him at second base. You could run, throw a bunt down. There's a lot of things you could do, but I don't know. Boone looks like he's, he's Cashman's puppet. So I don't know. He's gonna do it.
Is that right? So. Well, Al, you love Boone.
I like Boone.
Okay.
Love is a strong term. right now, I usually have a lot of frustration towards Yankee management, at least post-2009. It wasn't a great decade for the Yankees, Alan, just to, you've been in New York for the better part of the decade.
Oh, you didn't win a World Series for a decade.
We didn't make a World Series for a decade. Last time that happened was the 1910s, just to clarify for everyone at home. You've had it a little bit rougher, but, the thing that I've been super frustrated about is just, obviously, you want to win and not even making it to the World Series this past decade. That was tough. The thing that's been most frustrating to me, however, the past 2 seasons is just the overall state of the medical staff or whatever the Yankees are doing to make sure that players condition properly, because it's not even opening day. We already have another rash of injuries. You have stuff that apparently popped up last year, whether if we're going to talk about Judge or Paxton or Severino, apparently it wasn't addressed until spring training. Yeah, that,
that's,
of spring
that's
training.
Unacceptable for yeah. a team that's the Yankee. I mean, that's almost a joke, really, when you think about it, that no one knows what's going on. I mean, the guy hurts it. He had a shot, they said, in October, then they don't check the whole winter.
And I mean, he heard a crack and a pop.
I mean, that's it's hard to understand that they're managed. That never would happen when George was around.
Oh, you're right.
They'd all be gone.
You're right.
I mean, and not to say anything, but, you know, they haven't won a pennant since George has been gone, too. So don't, you know, they said he was crazy, but, you know, they got results, you know, sometimes. Sometimes it's, sometimes not. Sometimes not. But I just can't understand as a Yankee that they don't have the, I mean, the MRI team and the machine doesn't work. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, stuff that you hear, it's like a little kid going to the, you know, to the doctor in like a fifth grader saying what hurts. And I mean,
misdiagnosis,
it's
right?
Yeah, it's just hard to understand that. I mean, they're supposed to have, they should have the best orthopedics, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so it's hard to understand that with the Yankees, you know?
I read a great headline and said it wasn't batting practice, it was malpractice.
Yeah. That's it.
That's hard to believe.
I like that one.
But I'm actually very curious to see if this is going to be a recurring thing throughout the year. One thing that I'm going to keep an eye on, although I don't think it'll happen just because there's clearly something going on in the front office. Will there be any repercussions for Boone or Cashman should they not win at least a pennant this season? Are they both like completely safe?
I don't know about that. I mean, for Boone, I wouldn't get, I'm not a huge Boone guy, but I wouldn't get on Boone for that.
Cashman. Yes.
Yeah.
It's about time, especially with these injuries. It's finally you have something to hold him accountable for.
Yeah.
But they love him for some reason.
They do.
And how they love him. You know, the guy hasn't won a pennant in 10 years. I mean, it's hard to believe. I mean, all right, he's built a young team, but we never really had pitching, right? We've always had problems. We don't have pitching. We don't have pitching. So finally he got cold, but, you know, everyone, even the millennials, always say, oh, Cashman got this guy and he got that guy. But any of his moves, they don't talk about Ellsbury. Right?
No.
They don't talk about
right,
that. Pavano, they don't want to talk about.
Right.
So any of his bad, Sonny Gray was a disaster. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Sonny Gray. So when you're talking about all his great things, yes, but what about his bad moves?
And how about the Stanton trade, too, that they just took on 10 years out of nowhere?
We still think that's hopeful, though, the Stanton trade. That's the problem with Cashman. Cashman sells this dream that's perfect. That's just like, we've got the perfect set with our team. Look at this shiny bullpen.
Yeah.
Look at these nice little prizes and baubles. But they don't realize the cracks inside the toys.
Stanton is a broken down player, right? I mean, the guy is when he is healthy, he's outstanding as far as hitting home runs, right? But if you really look at this guy and you break down his swing, he doesn't even use his legs. I mean, you got to watch this guy swing a bat. It's all upper body.
He's not a hitter, he's a slugger.
It's just unbelievable to me that he made it this far.
Yeah, I'm surprised like the Yankees, they just don't believe in left-handed power and left-handed, which was always a staple years ago, but they don't seem to care. Well, these guys do hit the ball to right field, which is amazing. You know, they just hit the ball to right field. You never saw that years ago as much. So they have the power. But, you know, I would like to see this kid, Andujar, get a chance because the guy gets hits. And in the playoffs, you need hits. I mean, and, you know, this bullpen is good, but if you have good starting pitching, you could put the starting pitching in the bullpen like the Nationals did. And if the Mets got in there, they could put the starters in there. They could be a dangerous team if they made the postseason because you don't need a good bullpen. You know, you could use your starters. So, you know, Cashman always did about the bullpen, but you need guys during the season to go more than 4 or 5 innings because the bullpen gets shot, you know?
We saw it last year, 100%.
You need guys, that's why they got cold, you know? I mean, you need guys who got 7, 8. I mean, CC was a love affair, but he should have been gone 2 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, and we knew that, right? We knew that he was going to go 4 or 5, and I think that did set the precedent because we couldn't get anywhere in the playoffs. You don't have that 7-inning, 8-inning guy, you're dead.
You need a quality start pitcher, one who gives you 6 innings, 3 earned runs or less. And it seems like Cashman, and also with Boone, Boone's ready to give them the hook early because he has so much faith inside that bullpen. But maybe let him go a little distance. Maybe there's something they're showing in the metrics that the third time around is something wrong with the starters. But Masahiro Tanaka seems to be coming around this spring.
Yes.
I mean, well, as
they
long as this spring lasts.
They're very quick to give him the hook. They have a very quick hook with Tanaka. For those reasons, that's why I really hope they give a lot of thought into whoever this fifth starter is. Because another thing that they did last year, which really didn't help, was that dependence on the opener, where you're throwing, let's say, Chad Green out there for an inning and 2/3 or 2 innings max, and then you need to get 24 outs from the bullpen, depending on the night. We saw it rear its ugly head come October. So I know that you have a few options there right now. I know Davey Garcia is a highly touted prospect. He struggled a little bit this spring. Need some more seasoning. Clark Schmidt's looked impressive, but he hasn't pitched above Double A. Michael King, he's shown some flashes, but overall, you know, the body of work at the higher minor league levels, they would tell me that I think that he might not necessarily be ready for the big stage. I feel like your safest bet might be someone like a Jonathan Loaisiga. He's got four pitches. He can hit the upper 90s. I hope that they roll the dice on someone like that rather than, you know, maybe kind of forcing someone into a position that they're not ready for, or like I said, you know, depending on the opener like that.
Is Jordan Montgomery the fourth starter then?
Yeah, Montgomery. I think he's got that job on lockdown.
Right? I think you're right.
Devi could be like the next, like Pedro Martinez. He's such so short. The guy's got a freaking ball that pops out of his hand. But I don't know. The command's not there. I don't know. Who would you pick above everyone else? Would you say Loaisiga?
I would say Loaisiga, yeah.
I like Sessa, but he's good to come out of the bullpen just to give you innings, you know.
You're the first Yankee fan that said that they like Sessa.
Every time Sessa comes in, I feel like it's a meatball down the plate. Every time.
But if you look at this year, he gave you valuable innings to
guy. Can I tell you something? Yeah. You're right. He's got tremendous potential. I just don't know.
I mean, I don't know. He's not a great, but you need guys like that. I mean, when they won in the 70s, you need to get Tidjo. You had Mendoza. Yes. You had all these guys. You can't always have superstars, you know? So
correct.
And he could start. I like him, but then, of course, people don't like him. I don't think he's a bad pitcher, Sessa.
I don't either. I don't either. There's been times where he's gotten lit up, but I don't think he's a bad pitcher. I think he just needs time. And unfortunately, we don't have that, right? We just got to try to win ball games. But
do all the injuries bring the Yankees a lot closer to the pack?
I don't know.
Not many good teams. I mean, how many teams are really good in the American League? Four or five teams? I mean, you know, they should be able to.
I think it locks in Minnesota. I think Houston's probably a lock for the West. Tampa Bay is going to be very good.
Yep.
White Sox, I think, are going to be a surprisingly good team. Yasmani Grandel was a phenomenal signing. He has had one of the top catchers over the past 4 years with a 50% on the boundary pitches, where it's between a strike and a ball where they can't tell. And so his framing technique where he brings it back into the zone has been one of the most phenomenal over the past 10 years at least.
Yeah.
So he completely revolutionized that Brewers staff. You're going to see the Brewers definitely go down.
They had a Dallas Keuchel too on the rotation front.
And as a ground ball pitcher inside Chicago, that stadium, it's going to be good.
Oakland is good too.
Yeah, Oakland will be fantastic.
Oakland's good too. I mean, it all depends about how injuries when these guys come back and you know, you're banking on Torres playing shortstop the whole season. You hope he doesn't get hurt. I mean, there's a lot of factors. I mean, you got LeMahieu, but, you know, I think they got a lot of pieces, but it depends on how long they play, you know. And then the outfield, guys filled in great last year. I like that kid Ford.
Yeah, I do
think,
too.
I tell you the truth, he really gives you a nice quality at bat. I mean, he's a lefty. I always like the lefties, you know.
I agree.
You know? Especially at first.
Yeah.
Well, he came in.
Now
he
you
came
got,
to
yeah,
show,
Ford right? came like, in. Yeah. Now you got to love Ford.
Yeah, I think he, you know, he gives you a quality at bat. He takes walks. He files pitches off. You know, that's an art too. I mean, this kid Torres is, from what I see, is unbelievable. Well, hopefully he'll continue. You know, playing shortstop is going to be more difficult now.
Yeah. The fact it's his natural position, though, I'm actually, if that's the biggest concern, his defense at shortstop, I mean, we saw him play there, at least 70 times last year in Teddy's absence. I'm not that worried about his defense, and he's such a good player offensively that I think it'll make up for it. So let me ask, come October or maybe November when the playoffs begin, are we looking at both teams from New York in the postseason?
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Heck yeah.
I can't, don't give me hope like that.
See?
it just burning my heart just thinking about that. I'm already a Jets and Knicks fan. Come on. I mean,
wow.
It's a bleeding hope of just trying.
And Islanders too?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And Islanders.
I don't know if the Mets are going to, I mean, the Mets could win. It depends on the bullpen. It depends on a lot of things.
I think it's health like you guys.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, it just seems like in New York, there's a dearth of quality medical personnel who want to work with the Mets and Yankees, even though they've got the most money to give.
But the Mets have upgraded. They look real good. And I'm not a Mets fan. I don't hate the Mets at all, but like they have improved their team. It's going to be really fun to watch.
I think it's going to be actually a lot of fun. Thank you for Dylan Betances, by the way. We really appreciate that gift, guys.
I mean, I'm still surprised by that.
Like, I think this bullpen, like for the first time ever, I could be like, wow, it's actually decent.
Yeah.
Like I could see some saves coming from here. I'm not going to be chomping at the bits of my nails come eighth, ninth inning every single time. But I'm really excited for what's coming up. And Yoenis Cespedes for giving away that much money to come back and play for us?
Right.
And he's, I mean, come on, he's the horseman. He fell down through a hole and broke his leg. I mean, come on, this is great, though.
Wild boar,
that's what it was?
Yeah. Oh, wild boar. Look, I'm not like him. I'm not like Casey. I don't like the Mets. I grew up against them.
Yeah.
I don't want them to win at all, you know? I mean, if they played the Phillies, I'd rather have the Phillies win, to be honest with you. Yeah, but they're going to have a tough, what they have is they have a tough division. But you have some good teams there. And it's all about the pitch. I mean, they got the starting pitching. It's the bullpen. It's all. It's all. It's like a piece. It's like a jigsaw puzzle, you know. But if the starting pitching is lights out, can they score? Can they play good defense, which is also important.
I love the way you put that, Gil, because it's honestly, every single time, it's like a jigsaw puzzle when it comes to these Mets. It's like you got all these loose-fitting pieces where it looks fantastic on paper from one aspect or another. And then when it just comes together, something like water spills all over and it gets soggy and just you can't fit them together at all. But I mean, I'm hoping that with this new, they've gotten a lot more talent. And I feel like that the defense on the field is much better. Noah Syndergaard definitely has a bounce back year because he's had overall for the past 3 years the highest fastball average velocity, and which amongst a starter is very significant. And I mean, the guy's got to do it. I mean, his name's Thor. Like, God of Thunder. Yeah. I mean, you got to let him crack down the thunder.
Yeah, he's going to want to make the money. He wants big contracts. Exactly. He's going to have a big year, right?
It's the incentive.
It's the big incentive. Cole, I hope, has a big year, but we're going to need him in the playoffs, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But I think you guys have a much better shot of going further in the postseason because just the depth of your offense with Miguel Andujar, who's in the back, and Gio Urshela, you still got back there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and like even if a down year from DJ LeMahieu, which probably I'm projecting based upon how the baseball is turning out to be.
Yeah, you still got that Ford kid.
But that Ford kid is very interesting. I really like that kid.
Oh, and he makes a lot of contact too. Yeah, I like Mike Ford a lot. You know, and especially with what you saw from Luke Voit down the stretch last year, I do think a big part of that was attested to some of the injuries that he fought, you know, his struggles. He didn't even make the postseason roster. But I do like Mike Ford, and I think there's a lot to be said for contact hitters nowadays in baseball because it's kind of becoming a dying breed. I mean, you have the MVPs of the league. Listen, if they're going to bat 300, I'm not going to knock someone for not, you know, striking out 170 times. But it's kind of becoming the norm. You look at the top 10 leaders in strikeouts by batters. You know, it used to be embarrassing to strike out 100 times a season. That's what Ken Singleton always says.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, that's kind of like middle of the pack, which is that's just unbelievable to me.
It's hard to believe they strike out so much and no one puts the bat. It's a different game now. Everything is just two strikes. Nobody really protects or tries to get on base or anything, which is... And also, when, like you said, with the Yankees, they have all these guys at home runs, but in the playoffs, they face better pitching. That's when they got to learn during the season. That's why against Boone, they have to learn how to move runners every so often. They're playing good pitches. In the playoffs, they're not hitting home runs. First of all, if it's usually cold weather and stuff, the ball doesn't carry. And they need to get singles. I mean, it's good that they beat Baltimore and get 50 home runs and Sanchez and Torres. But in the postseason, you're facing better pitching. And the one run is a big thing for difference. They have to learn how to get those runners in.
Well, that's what baseball is, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's why it's changed so much. And, you know, look at someone like, listen, I love DJ LeMahieu because the guy makes things happen. He can hit home runs, but he does get those hits, those doubles, those singles, drives in runs, scores runs. That's the kind of game you really need in the playoffs, right? And if you don't have that, I mean, look, we got burned a lot. We were trying to hit home runs. We didn't have our pitchers go past the fifth or sixth inning. We got burned. We got burned and exposed real easy in a short series. That's what killed us. So yeah, it goes back to being able to play baseball the way it should be played, getting the runners over, playing a little small ball, and yeah, getting that home run when you need it, not when you're just trying to get one run in.
So. Yeah, years ago the way they do the lineups now. I mean, when Henderson was leaning off the Yankees, or even Willie Wilson they get on base second, you know, and Brett would drive him in. I mean, you were up down up 1-0 right away, and
right
that
away.
Game is kind of loose. And
I was like Knobloch, even with the late '90s Yankees.
Yes, sure.
He got
yes.
on base a lot. I just don't like these batting like Judge batting second. I mean, I like our best guy to bat third or fourth. I don't like this whole thing of batting guys first. You know, you want a couple guys to get on base and a guy to come up with men on base because the pitchers are going to have to, you know, when they have to be more challenged with men on base. You know, sometimes he gets up second, and if the guy's not on base, he's I don't know. That's a new thing now, what they put their best hitters batting second. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but that seems like the way of going with baseball.
No, I absolutely don't. I mean, I agree with you completely on that front, though, because I think the best player should definitely be in the third or fourth hole, because traditionally it's shown statistically the most amount of RBIs come from the third and fourth hole. And so what you want is your big, you don't need big sluggers, but you need someone who makes that consistent contact, as you gents have mentioned. The one thing I don't like, as you agree, is that I agree with, it's like Jock Peterson of the Dodgers. They had him batting leadoff most of the time. And this guy is like a 230, 240 hitter.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what are you trying to do? You're trying to get a home run right off the bat of the game to get them rallied up and start going for something? It's like, what? No, get the people on base, get the rally going, and get the energy behind the
team. You're right. I always said the same thing. It always seemed backwards to me. Why would they do that?
It's just like, might as well just like put the pitcher there in the same spot. Like, why not? Like, you're just giving it away right now.
I think what they say, because if they're up early, they'll get another at bat at the end of the game maybe. But I don't know. I just, I hate to see that, but I mean, it's not just the Yankees. It's most teams that do that now, which is a different way of baseball. Baseball is different now, you know? I mean, look, you could even say when Goose got in trouble with Mariano, when his game, or when we were there with Lyle, they came on with men on base. They'd come in the seventh inning, two men on, Tug McGraw for you. You got to believe for you. So I was young enough to remember that, but they would come on base. They didn't have really error. I mean, they come in and pitch two or three. Now, Mariano did do that in the postseason, so we're not going to say that because he did pitch multiple innings. But in the regular season, he only pitched one inning.
But
it's a different game.
It does surprise me because, I mean, you guys, I mean, I'm a million years old. So, like, you know, when I look at these guys and I see, like, Goose coming with men on base, three innings, that was a closer for me as a kid. You know, Mariano, like, you know, I'm not saying the guy's wimpy, but, like, he would go that one inning. He just reinvented the game. It changed the game.
Right? It was a huge deal when he went multiple innings.
Yes, it was. And they talked about it all the time. They made such a huge deal about this. And that's why, you know, Goose gets angry because...
Well, he says it the way it is. I mean whether you like him or not. But, I mean, Mariano, but you got to give him credit because the multiple innings he did in the postseason when it counted.
Of course. Right. And I'd never...
But you wonder, like, Goose or Sparky. And Sparky will pitch 5-6 innings in a game. And he pitched the next day. But you wonder that when they pitched the whole year like that, when they pitched 2 or 3 innings, what did they have left at the end of the year? I mean, those guys, their arms were... I mean, I was talking to a lot of guys. Those guys didn't even know what it was to... have a sore arm. They just went out and pitched, you know. So different mentality. You know, now if a guy gets hurt, you know, he tells you right away he's hurt. Years ago, they were afraid of losing their jobs. They would play hurt, you know.
Exactly. So now what they do is I feel like they baby these guys. I really do. I think they take too much caution in trying to get these guys to make sure they're healthy. They don't throw them enough. Maybe they don't throw them hard enough. I don't know if you saw Nolan Ryan a few years ago. He was like, what are they doing to these guys? Nolan Ryan, you know, Nolan Ryan was...
I know, I would tell you an example. Nolan Ryan, he threw like, he hit Munson in the head one time, right? And Munson was out 1 or 2. Munson was never on a disabled list in 10 years. That's hard to believe, right?
Yes, really?
The guy was a catcher.
Unbelievable.
That he didn't, these guys were never on a disabled list. Now, they had to have injuries. I mean, the guy had bad knees.
Now you have a 10-day DL or IL.
Injury list. Correct.
But the guy got hit by Nolan Ryan fastball and then he was out of the game and the next game he was playing. So, you know, it's a different era. I mean, Nettles, those guys were tough.
They were.
And nowadays, you like these guys and they complain a little bit wimpy, I would agree.
Well,
you know what I mean?
It's the money. It's got to be the money aspect because you have such investments within these players that are trying to give like a return in value through them playing on the field. The problem is we don't have them on the field anymore. You take them off the field so often that it's kind of just media. It's like a media response where it's a sponsorship and you just see the logo of Judge standing. But they play about 5-7 games.
I mean, who's the poster child? Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah,
you never saw the guy. And the guy could play when he was healthy. That was rare, right? I mean, what did he have? One good season with New York? One?
Define good.
Okay.
none better than his Boston seasons. Think about that.
But like you said, when he was healthy, he was not a bad player.
No.
You know, he could get on base, he could steal bases.
He could steal bases, but
he never was, you know, then there was almost a mockery the way at the end that he was always hurt.
It was tough to watch. Every 3 days he'd come out and he'd be hurt again with something. And like, I don't even remember what he had. I used to have a list. It was ridiculous.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Alan, have we ever had anything, you know, on the Broadway world as far as like equivalent of like a bust, someone that we thought was just going to have like a super bright future here and just like kind of flamed out quickly without hurting feelings?
Oh, God. The entire Broadway cast of Be More Chill.
Yeah. So you just like, what about like, we'll roll
into... Not the people, but the show itself.
Oh, yeah, the show itself.
The show itself, it was off-Broadway doing great, like a bajillion soundtrack, a bajillion streams online from the soundtrack. And then as soon as it hit Broadway, it just died. And there's so many theories behind it.
Yeah, why does that happen?
It's argued that the demographic is for a younger audience, so they are able to afford off-Broadway tickets, but not Broadway tickets. The demographic of Broadway is slightly older.
Translate.
It didn't translate so well, and that's what happened. And now it just opened in London, and it's doing well. So, I mean, who knows if it's going to keep going now. Like, if London shuts down and declares a state of emergency, who knows? But, yeah, I would say, like, in individual people, God, there have been people in the reverse that have blown me out of the water. I was like, Adrienne Warren in Tina. Have you seen that yet, Al?
I haven't.
Like, give that girl all the Tonys. She just came. I was like, I don't know what this is about. I don't know if I'm going to like this. And I just could not pick my jaw up off the floor.
Wow.
So that there are defining roles for people, and this is hers. So I got the reverse. I don't pay attention. I guess I forget the bad stuff. We're genetically designed. Our lizard brain does that, you know.
Yeah.
Have you seen To Kill a Mockingbird?
Because I have not yet.
Taking my wife to see that. I hope it's good. So I get in trouble if it's not good.
Well, I mean, it's broken box office records 3 times. So it's
and Ed Harris is a quality.
Well, you think Ed you're Harris taking her, but yeah. Once Broadway reopens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that positive Yankees start and everything else starts. Yeah. And we get back to real life and hopefully, this comes over quickly, right?
Now, our friend Dori Berenstein, you know, she created the Lights of Broadway show cards and they made, you know, the Broadway blackout card. I wonder if Lights of Broadway is going to do like some sort of a COVID-19 card.
Oh, just to, God. Like, the Broadway shutdown of 2020 card.
Let me ask you this. You know, we talked about Tonys before. Do you think that this, you know, with what we're going through right now, is going to impact, you know, some of the winners and some of the shows that we
absolutely are? Absolutely. Because Six was supposed to open tonight. Diana's supposedly about to open. And like Mrs. Doubtfire is going to postpone. Like, there are shows that are supposed to be in this Tony season that I think won't open.
And at all
before the deadline. And to be
what does that mean, before the deadline?
So there's just like I know what I'm talking about with sports. there's to be considered for there's an official beginning and end date by which a show has to open to be considered for this 2020 season of Tony Awards.
Okay.
So the deadline to open is, I believe, sometime in April. I don't know.
The award ceremony is usually like first week of June, first or second Sunday of June.
Yeah, okay. So it's the first Sunday of June. Nominations come out right at the end of April. So it's like you have to open by like that Thursday or Friday before the Monday of nominations.
Wow.
And so it's real quick. So there is a deadline to be considered. And there are people now who may not get their chance to be nominated or even win. You know, it's all about timing, right? Like, if you open against Hamilton, you're not going to win anything. There are shows that are just going to sweep everything. So you might win this year. You might not win. I mean, this might be good for some people. They might not have won this year, where next year they will, if they open. We were in here for another recording session earlier with an off-Broadway cast. And in the middle of the recording, they got the notice that last night was their last show. Wow. Like, they just closed.
So what do they do for work?
They're actors. They just audition, keep going. Yeah. Yeah, they are unemployed. Collect unemployment.
Can we go another hour talking about Broadway? Because I'm in now. I'm totally in. This is actually really interesting.
It is super interesting. Let me ask you this. You think that any of these shows that, you know, I had mentioned earlier that The Minutes was supposed to open this weekend, do you think any of them just don't come back?
I do. Because there are, especially with plays, they're already limited runs anyway, because you've got a season mapped out of like, this comes in here, this comes in there. And some of it is based on the availability of the actors that are in the show. So if you've got a celebrity actor like Armie Hammer, or like, who's in Soldier's Play right now? David Alan Greer.
Yeah.
So like, if that were to be pushed back and to the point where he can't do it anymore because he's got to go shoot a movie, then you lose your star and you might lose your box office revenue. And then the whole thing just gets canned.
Wow.
So this is going to throws a wrench in everything. And I think it is a safe bet. The odds are high that the Tonys will be canceled.
Canceled. Wow. No
words given. First, folks.
Well, or they would not invite an audience.
Is that possible with do with Broadway? Because they're talking about doing that with sports. Do you think it's feasible so that they can get to the Tony Awards, such as show as Six, which they actually open up to the critics?
If they do the awards period, because they're missing like half of the shows now, that like, if the shows don't open, Mrs. Doubtfire and Six and Diana and some others, like, I really don't know. I mean, because it's up to the panel, the board of directors and all that of the theater wing and everything to decide what's happening with the shows, and they have to work with Equity because Equity is the actors' union, and so the union would be like, well, it's unsafe to perform. Mm-hmm. We can't, like, Equity was already saying, you know, don't do stage dooring, don't greet your fans, don't. And then some of the theater owners were setting out blanket policies saying absolutely no visitors backstage as early as last week. So just like stop spreading all this stuff. But when you have all these, the Tonys right now cannot happen under Cuomo's emergency declaration. It's 500 or more people.
Right. So you Radio
can't,
City.
So you can't have, yeah, you can't have anybody in the audience.
Oh my God.
Or you could have 499 people in the audience, right?
Yeah. So you've never seen this before, actually,
no,
in the Broadway world. So never. This is just unprecedented, newfound territory.
Wow. Yeah.
The lights before. Went off on Broadway.
You think indeed. We've seen our last Beetlejuice performance?
Oh gosh. Maybe.
June 2nd or the first weekend of June was supposed to be that.
Yeah, it was the first week of June. Yeah, so they were supposed to go through the Tonys. That they might be done.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is
that hurts. You like that hurts.
You saw that. You liked that show. You said
I loved that show. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We have me and Scotty saw that one. Yeah. That was that's one of my favorites. I was trying to hope to, you know, maybe see it again. I had tickets to see Moulin Rouge April 2nd. That's not happening now. And that's let's see how high in demand those tickets are once the lights go back on.
Wow. Here
because and you know you've got some big names in that one too, Alan. You have Aaron Tveit and you have Karen Olivo. Mm-hmm. God knows what their schedules are like if they. I don't know.
Karen lives in Wisconsin. She comes here to perform.
Oh, they just got a state of emergency too, Wisconsin, just today.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so, and think about, compare, not discounting 9/11 by any stretch of the imagination, right. But when 9/11 happened, Broadway shut down for like, I think it was 2 or 3 days, max.
Yeah.
And then they came back. And it was like, we as a city need something to bond over and literally to come together and enjoy. And it's the coming together that's the problem now.
Yeah.
Social distancing is now it's what they're pushing.
We need it most. Sure. They just self-quarantine, isolate yourself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this is just never happened before. And I mean, like you, the three of you, the four of you, including Al, like Al's in the Venn diagram of theater lovers and sports lovers.
Yeah.
But you come together and you enjoy baseball. You enjoy sports. That's your coming together. And so there are just as passionate theater fans who are hurting because they can't go and sit down and watch their favorite actor or actress or hear their favorite song being sung live or performed live. And this is going to hurt. I mean, this is a mental health crisis as much as it is
right.
a health crisis or physical health crisis, in my opinion, anyway.
This is a tough one to swallow. And, you know, as we said in the beginning of the show, we hope y'all, you know, take the necessary precautions. And, you know, we're going to try to use this podcast mostly as a platform for you to just to escape for a little bit. With that being said, I thought of one, you know, fun little thing we could do to wrap the show tonight. We go around the table. Alan, you can, I kind of have like a special one for you because
I can't wait.
Although if you want to throw your 2 cents into on the sports side of things, let's hear everyone's predictions on a final outcome for the 2020 Mets and Yankees. And if anyone wants to throw their 2 cents into this one, who do you think wins a Tony Award for Best Musical once the lights go back on? So there's like a hint of betting here. So like you're potentially betting on whether or not Six actually opens, Diana, and how that would stack up to, let's say, a show like Moulin Rouge or Jagged Little Pill, which have been some real powerhouses in the industry. Why don't we start with you, Gil?
I don't know too much about Broadway, but I'll take your advice. Who you think is going to be good? I don't really know about Tony. And all the plays are so talented, so much talent there. So let's just hope that soon that they'll be open again and whoever's going to win the Tony, I don't know. The Mets are going to win 87 games and not be in the playoffs and the Yankees going to win the division. I don't want to even, you know, even with the Yankees, I'm not so in about the number of wins, but even if they just win 97 wins, just be prepared for the playoffs because I couldn't care less about the 100 wins. I mean, Boone's won 100 wins. Means nothing to me. I mean, they say, oh, Boone, but get prepared and play the season like means something for the playoffs.
So what's the final outcome then? Wait, we've got
the Mets are not going to make the playoffs, 87 wins, and the Yankees are going to win 97 wins and win the division.
Do they get past the division?
I'm going to hope that they will get a pennant. I'm just praying that they get to the World Series.
Get to the World Series.
That's what I'm – I don't know if they're going to win it, but if they don't get to the pennant, then we got to get the manager or GM that can get us there.
That's a realistic Yankee fan.
Yes,
very much so. The ones that are like, they're going to win every year. I mean, enough. Just calm down, you know?
Right. Casey, what are your predictions?
If the Mets make the playoffs, Yankees win in six for the World Series, right? If they go all the way, right? Are we doing matchup?
Do whatever you want.
All right, we're doing a matchup. Mets make it. Amazing, right?
Amazing.
We'll have another meeting here.
Did they make it as a division winner or a wild card winner?
Wild card.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Yankees win in six. I don't know anything about Broadway, but I'm going to say Diana comes out. What, first wins a Tony? I have no idea what I'm talking about. What? I can't even fake this.
Comes in first place by 3.5 seconds. Yeah,
exactly. What are you asking me? I don't know that.
And it comes around the corner and we've got first place. At least
Gil is like, yeah, I don't know.
I really don't know.
I can't even fake
it. I just like to go once or twice a year because I enjoy it. And like even going to, the Lincoln and Met and all. I mean, you should try to go there. And I mean, being in New York, you get the best in the world here. So you should really see the talent here. I mean, it's beautiful to see and spend the night and so forth. So that's hopefully, I feel bad for the entertainment industry, the hotels, the people who have restaurants, like all this stuff is what, to get the economy, it's going to take a big hit. So that's what I'm very sad about a lot of the people in the entertainment industry and that. So hopefully this could pass over sooner than later and things could get back to semi-normal.
Dougie?
Well, I mean, when it comes to the Tonys, anyone who watches a show is a winner, just naturally. But I got to say, Jagged Little Pill or Virginia Woolf. What do you think?
Virginia Woolf?
I saw Jagged Little Pill and I loved it. Jagged Little Pill's a pretty safe bet, though. For me personally, as a student of baseball and theater, I want to go see the shows before I make that type of hot take. For you guys, it doesn't matter as much.
Really?
We only see one show.
So, and let me hear about Mets and Yankees.
Well, okay. So Mets, I'm going to be the realistic, pessimistic Mets fan who's actually cautiously optimistic. So playoffs, wild card. I think the Braves will probably get over them in the NL East. The Mets will probably go to the conference series, but I believe they lose to the Dodgers, who go on to play actually the Yankees in the World Series. But I think it's going to go up to seven games in that World Series. The depth of the relief pitching of the Yankees is what leads me to believe, because when you get to the World Series, is that you can start going to your bullpen more often and you can have those openers, starters, like you said, that I believe the Yankees will win within seven against the Dodgers. If it was against the Mets, they would win in four.
We do have Chapman. You've got Chapman.
You've got the Cuban missile right there, right?
Yeah. First time his name's come up the whole show, actually.
That's right.
That's a record.
It's weird for this show.
I was like, wait a second.
Does it come up every show? Oh, because you're like obsessed with the guy, right? A little bit.
He is a mascot to the baseball and Broadway community. Obsessed is a strong word. Alan, take us home. Predictions?
Oh, God. I don't need to go last. I know nothing about the Astros and the Metskis.
The Metskis. I'm still going to call them that.
The Yankets.
Yank.
So they'll come in first place by 3.5 seconds and take it in eight. There we go.
Not bad.
And the Mets will win the Tony. Right?
And the Mets will win the Tony. There we go. Best soap opera. That's what I mean. Kill me.
Oh, I love it. Guys, I can't thank you all enough for coming in tonight. This was awesome.
It was great.
Thank you.
Great.
No, it was absolute great. Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you too.
We hope that you all love Break a Bat. And if you love it enough, during these trying times, we're, like I said, we're here to provide a platform for y'all, on the baseball side and the Broadway side. If you like us, subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm so happy that we had the panel that we did tonight. And that'll end the baseball roundtable portion of tonight's episode. For all the folks at home, we hope you learned something and are, just as excited as we are about this upcoming baseball season and some of the great Broadway shows that we have opening. So we're going to sign off from the roundtable and leave you with a little chat that I had with a Broadway veteran and longtime Dodgers fan, Sarah Jean Ford. Take it away, Sarah. We're happy to welcome someone to the batter's box who can definitely speak intelligently when it comes to baseball and the arts. Now batting, Sarah Jean Ford.
Oh, hey, here I am, up at bat. I don't know if I can speak intelligently about baseball, but I can speak intelligently about being a fan.
That's important.
How's that?
And that goes back, I mean, you've been a fan forever.
I had to be.
You were born into it.
I believe my mom went to a game like 9 months pregnant.
So she's a California. She grew up as a California girl?
Yes, as did I.
9 months pregnant. She made
it to— 9 months pregnant, made it to the game.
Risky.
Yeah. 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 And so, yeah, I've been going ever since I was a kid. You know, I've sung the national anthem there. You know, it's in my blood. It has to be.
They might have to bring you back for the playoffs sometime soon because they haven't had a lot of luck lately. Maybe you could like turn that and give them some good vibes going into one of these playoff games.
They need me, you think?
I think so. I mean,
do they know that they need me? I don't know if they know that. You know, by the way, my mom did set up that gig, like my manager is, or like something. Like she was like, just so you know, Christine Dye, Sarah Jean Ford is in town and she would like to sing the national anthem. Like she full blown like was a stage mom for the first time in her life and made it happen.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
So your mom's your manager?
No.
Oh.
No, but she like was that day.
Oh, okay.
That one specific day.
So it happened like spur of the moment?
I think I was just coming into town for something. I was doing a concert. And yeah, she was like, well, guess what? I set something up for you.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun.
Are you nervous doing something like that?
You know, not so much anymore. Perhaps then I was. I don't know. My nerves have really like settled in my old age. Yeah. For something like that, it's just so many people that you sort of are just like, eh, okay. You know, I sang at the Rangers game, I think 2 years ago. And that was, I had my daughter backstage. I don't know what you would call it, in the room with me. And she got to watch and nobody told me that the Rangers, like the fans yell throughout the entire national anthem. They have like all these like bits and things they do. And my mom was like, that is so rude to a performer.
There's more etiquette with the baseball crowd. Right. I'll give us that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like growing up, so you grew up near California. You went to a lot of games. Your mom still had those tickets.
She had those tickets. She got them, her and I think my aunt, her sister, got them when they were like 18, 19. And then they had them for a very long time. They lost them. I think they lost them. They did. They lost them. It was sort of like they eventually started to like, you know, pool them out. And then somebody kind of came up from underneath and was like, I can pay for the whole thing. And then just sort of, it was a nasty little thing that happened. But obviously we still go all the time. And my brother's a big fan. And the game is always on when I go home. If, you know, if we're in season.
Now,
obviously,
honestly, in my apartment, the game is still on and like right. The Yankee Encore presents or the Yankee Classics or whatever the hell
right,
it was.
Right.
Not this time of year, though, because we're recording this right around Christmas, come to think of it. But cut that out, Al. Note in editing. I was going to ask you, like growing up to the stadium, was there like a certain moment where you realized that, you know, your soul kind of knew how to absorb the sport and all the tradition that comes with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sound of Vin Scully's voice, like, it is a part of that. Like, it's a very huge part of my childhood and, like, the sound of my childhood. It was always on the transistor radio. Do they have those anymore? Oh, they have to for, like, the end of the world and stuff. So the sound of his voice sort of, like, permeated my youth and you know, I mean, I've watched the stadium change over the years and it's so, so she now. There's like sushi and there's like all this, you know, wine. And, you know, back in the day, it was just one Dodger dog and some fries. And the peanut guy was the same peanut guy. The smell is the same, you know. What was I going to say? Yeah, and like my mom was really big on history, is big on history, and was super, it was very important to her to educate me about Chavez Ravine and like all the people that lived there and like how they were basically torn from their homes so this stadium could be built. And I mean, so like the history of that area is just like, it's all in me. Like I know that drive by heart and yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Do you think that there's still a lot of hostility there because of that? You mentioned the...
I mean, I can't say for sure. All I know is my white privilege, to be honest. And there still are like a lot of little teeny tiny houses around that area. And we would always take the back road. That was how I knew about it, because we never took the like formal entrance to Dodger Stadium. We always like took this back road, and it would like go through all of these little tight little streets. And then you would see like the goat that like the people had, you know, like people still sort of kept up their historic ways of living there as best as they could. I can't imagine. I don't know. I mean, they were there for, you know, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before we came. Yeah. Like, it's not like, I don't know. I'm sure they do have some resentment.
Very fair. Who were some of your guys growing up? Were you like more the, you're Oral Hershiser's too. You would have.
Oral Hershiser. I met Oral Hershiser. My mom was like really, my mom used to run a senior PGA golf tournament. So we also were surrounded by just sports in general because of all of the sponsors for the golf tournament. So, I mean, I knew all the golf players. And then we went to like every basketball game and every hockey game and every football game. I mean, we were just always, that was such a cool part of my childhood. For some reason, I can't remember why I met Oral Hershiser, but I met him. I mean, he was like the star. He was like sort of the rock star of that time. And I mean, Kirk Gibson, obviously. You know what? I did wear my Dodger shirt today to the gym, though. The 1981 Championship World Series.
Oh, when you beat the Yankees. Nice. One for you
to
choose.
I did wear that to the gym today, just to give you that.
That's sick. Now we do one thing to wrap every show here.
Yeah.
And it's high stakes.
High stakes.
Oh, yeah. Think of it, ninth inning.
Okay.
Game's on the line. You're down by a run, man on first, man on second.
Okay.
And you got to get a hit here.
Okay.
And it's called Fastball Derby. Someone's on the mound throwing 105 miles an hour. Let's say it's Chapman for the spirit of our show.
Right.
I ask you a question, you say the first thing that comes to your head.
Okay. All right. Okay. Nervous.
All right. You got through Phantom. This is probably more difficult, actually.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Favorite New York City meal?
The soup man downstairs.
Is that, I guess that's the first thing that comes to your head?
Yeah.
Pretty good. New York City landmark that you've never been to but still want to see?
The Top of the Rock.
Same.
Yeah. Right.
I'm glad you didn't say Statue of Liberty. I would feel weird with that one.
Statue of Liberty is great. Ellis Island is fantastic.
Walking through a woman's cloak, though, that's not
unnecessary.
Ellis Island, though, I should.
Ellis Island, to. I cried when I went to Ellis Island. It's moving.
Your dream role?
Hasn't been created yet.
You got to create it.
Yeah, indeed.
Most challenging song you've ever had to sing in a performance?
Glitter and Be Gay.
Was it vocally or the subject matter of the song?
Vocally.
Okay. Yeah. Favorite late night snack? Two show day, it's after midnight. What's Sarah grabbing before she hits the couch?
Lately, it's peanut butter and company, cinnamon peanut butter with raisins, and Mary's Gone crackers and blueberries.
Wow. That's diverse array of stuff all in one setting. You have it all.
Oh, and cheese.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
No crackers?
Gone crackers. Seed crackers.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Most embarrassing onstage moment?
Do you really want to hear it?
Hell yeah.
Okay. I was in Phantom of the Opera, and there's a moment when I have to like wake up from a dreamy spell and look over at the Phantom, and I'm like, oh my God, who is he? What is he doing? And he's like madly playing the organ. And then I have to go over and rip his mask off. And then he comes at me and he's like, damn you. And then there's like this whole thing and he runs at me and I like have to run away and I'm screaming and it's just, he's just so terrifying. He murders people. That particular day, they had painted the deck, which is something that they do pretty much every month. Once that fog hits the deck, everything gets just like so slippery. And nobody had told me that. I had just joined the tour. This was on tour. I was in Alabama. And I took that mask off and I ran and I had to run towards this, like, it's called a portcullis, which is like this, like, sort of like grate that comes down. And it's like the entire back of the stage. And I run towards it and I sort of like hold on and I'm like, oh. And I ran and my feet shot out from underneath me and I, like, like cooter slammed basically on the portcullis, like, ha! And it like it, my feet went underneath me and a bar, like a metal bar went right between my legs. And then I got up in character because I'm a professional and I ran down stage and I like laid down and then I was like, oh! And then, and apparently the like guy on the heads, you know, the spotlight was like, yeah, you're going to want to check on Sarah Jane Ford when she gets off stage. She took a really big spill. When I came off stage and I was bleeding, my vagina was bleeding, and I had to wear a ice pack in my leotard for the rest of the show, like my little cold secret. And that is what happened to me. And then they, you know, like they had to like fill out an accident report. And so like,
because that's all union stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So then the like, the insurance company like calls me and they're like, so how are you? Like, they were so nervous to talk to me about my cooter slam. So that's what happened to me.
Overall impressions of Clayton Kershaw.
Overall impressions of kind and like a do-gooder. I mean, him and his wife do like so many wonderful things for people. Those are, I would say those are my first impressions. And then next things next, just a really good pitcher.
What about in the playoffs?
I didn't watch the playoffs. Don't, I know. Sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry. I don't know what I was doing.
You're going to be exposed to.
I know. It's so embarrassing. It's like I'm the most embarrassing Dodger fan there ever was. And when I wear my Dodger hat, people are like, oh, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't know. Casey, I told you, it just all goes away. But I'm like, yeah, Dodgers. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. Didn't watch it.
With a beer and a Dodger dog, though, it's easy to get back into it. I got to go to Dodger Stadium.
You got to go. I have brought my daughter, and she loved it. So there you go.
Lastly.
Yes.
Best piece of advice anyone ever gave you.
Best piece of advice anyone ever gave me. That's a good one. My mom said once, I think someone had given her this advice, that sometimes you aren't taking a step back in your life. Sometimes you're just taking a step to the side. That's it. Yeah.
Good stuff, Sarah.
Thank you.
Well, that'll close out the ball game here on Break a Bat. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.